The master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently, shrewdly, cleverly, wisely. Is Jesus condoning fraudulence in business transactions today? Not at all. But he's pointing to something this servant did, something that matters for us. The details of the story can get a little mixed up sometimes. It's a very amazing but sometimes challenging parable. I kind of like a modern analogy, kind of like a middle manager at a corporation who's had some fiscal wrongdoing, and the boss says, "You are fired, you're out of here." But before it's the end of the day, before he's walked out of his office, this middle manager packs up all the stuff in the cardboard box to walk out to the parking lot, you know, gets his legal stuff all figured out, documents, but then realizes they never revoked his credentials. He can still sign on to the mainframe with his password. And so he begins cutting deals to his clients and his boss's clients, begins saving them money, begins pulling away income from the boss, so that when he is kicked out, when he goes to his car that evening, he'll have a lot of new friends. That's what's happening here. The steward is making friends with all these debtors, all these people who have these contracts, because he still has a short time where he can do that. He's still the steward for a little bit longer. This stuff he has, the business, the money, the contracts, he's got a little bit of time. What's it going to do for him to make it turn out the best for him? That's how shrewd he is. That's what Jesus is affirming there. Look how he provides for his future because he sees what's coming down the pike. And if only the children of light, if only you, my disciples, could be that shrewd about the kingdom of God in your midst. That's what he's saying. In the gospel, he says, they will receive me into their homes, meaning the debtors, meaning these business partners. And then Jesus says, if the children of light would be so shrewd, they would be received into eternal dwellings. Others would receive them into eternal dwellings. That's a very interesting line. What does that mean? Who's going to receive the children of light into these dwellings? The inescapable conclusion is that Jesus is referring to the poor and the needy and those who the world crushes, who seek a bit of water, a bit of air, a bit of roof. We often think of, you know, the gates of heaven being attended to by St. Peter. You know, he's got the keys, he's got the authority, you know, the first pope, all that good stuff. And we kind of have that Hollywood image of the gates up in the clouds. Might be some truth to that, but I think really the gatekeepers of heaven, if there are any, they are the poor. They are the ones whom Christ allows to stand there and to witness when Jesus says, "You did it to me," or "You did not do it to me." Jesus talks about dishonest wealth. The word is really unrighteous mammon, connects with that mammon phrase, meaning the whole process of money and business, and especially the wealth and selfishness and the turning inward that often brings with it. We can use money for good or for bad. It's morally neutral. How we use it, how we produce it, how we give it, that is what matters. We have as disciples, we've been transferred from a kingdom of this world to the kingdom of God. We were children of darkness, we're now children of light. Do we live like that? In the stewardship of the resources, the money, the gifts, the personal talents that we have, are we as shrewd as that steward to put them in service of the kingdom of God, where we will find friends for eternity? To do that, Christ calls us to be generous, to give to the poor, to give to the needy. Charity and love and almsgiving is not optional in the gospel. It is essential. It's part of following Jesus, who was rich as the Son of God eternally, became poor for us. And as we allow our lives to be touched by those who are poor, either materially or spiritually or emotionally, our lives, in fact, become richer as we take that risk and allow other people into our lives who are different, who don't have as much, who are seeking love, seeking assistance, seeking a roof. This truth of the gospel is illustrated so beautifully to conclude in one of the blessings for the sacrament of marriage. There's a bunch of different optional blessings that I could use at the end of a wedding rite, but I almost always use this one unless the couple wants a different one. It's the end of Mass. The couple stands before the altar. There's the final blessing. There's three invocations, and the final one goes like this. May you be witnesses in the world to God's charity, so that the afflicted and needy who have known your kindness may one day receive you, thankfully, into the eternal dwelling of God. Go in peace, husband and wife. It's almost a mirror image of the gospel. They will receive you into the kingdom of God. And as much as you love one another, this new couple, as much as you want to give yourselves to each other, start a family, beautiful. But don't forget that in your covenant, you're also called to be good stewards, sharing your love, sharing your life with the poor, with the needy. All of us, married or not, we are in a covenant with God as partner. We are bonded to God, united to God. And all of us are called in that same covenant to make known God's charity, God's love, God's generosity. There are only two masters. There is God and there is selfishness. There is mammon. Who will we serve? In the short time we have, may we use our goods, our gifts, our talents, our resources. May we use them for the kingdom of God as shrewdly as the children of this world.